starting with the Nishmas Avram. So you want the sheet that has the letter Taf at the top of it. It's number 14. Bikaret Ayedei Televizia. Visiting somebody in the hospital, or really looking in on somebody in the hospital, when there is a camera that you're going to have to pass in front of. That's what it's talking about. Bikaret Ayedei Televizia sounds like it can mean a bunch of different things, but that's what it's talking about. Everyone has it? Okay. All right. So, visiting an area that has camera surveillance, I mean, anytime you go anywhere in public at this point, you know, you have to know that that's what's going on. You walk down the street and people have them, you know, by their front doors. And the question is, what's the halachic position on walking through an area where you know that you are going to be recorded on camera? So that word recorded is actually a word we're going to have to revisit. But let's see what the Nishmas Avram does with it. And we're going to be jumping back and forth between the Nishmas Avram and the source sheet that I brought. The source sheet has English translations for some of the sources because I've used them in Shiurim. And I figured, all right, so I'm not going to force everybody to work just from the Hebrew if I have my English translation ready at hand. Bikoret al yedei televizia. Baharbe batei cholim, in many hospitals, were kevet matzlamot televizia b'magal sagur kedei levchon et hanichnasim lebinyan o lemachlaka. He says, in many hospitals, they have set up television cameras, closed circuit, in order to check those who are entering the building or those who are checking, you know, those who are entering the unit. The Gon Rabbi Yisrael Rosen, Shlita, Sha'al. He says, Rabbi Yisrael Rosen, who unfortunately is no longer a Shlita, he passed away a few years ago, but was very, very instrumental in Somet. He might have been the one who started Somet, actually. So he wrote a little mini article in the journal Tchumen asking the question, Ha'im mizdamein adam lemakom bo kayemet matzlama kazu. He says, if somebody ends up in a place where they have such a camera, afilu berchavot ubaram zorim. He says, forget the hospital. Doesn't have to be in a hospital situation. It could be on the street. It could be at a traffic light, whatever. I'm going to post the link again in the chat since we gained a couple of people. So he says, in such a case, is that all right? Klum yish iser shabbat lavor tachat shevet hamatzlama. Is there any prohibition to pass under literally the rod of the camera on Shabbos? He borrows that phrase from the Torah regarding Meiser Behema, when you tithe animals. So you pass the animals beneath the rod and you mark the tenth. So he borrows that here. You're passing within view of the camera. Is that an issue? That's his question. So I would put the question to you, but I think you all know the answer is going to have to be that yes, you can do it, because otherwise, literally, no one's going to hospitals, and we know people do go into hospitals. So the question really isn't so much, is this permitted, as how do you get there? How do you end up permitting it? And he is going to bring the views of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yeshua Neuwirth, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and Rav Yashiv, each bringing arguments that overlap somewhat, but in some ways are different, and ending up at permitting entering the hospital for this visit. Okay, clear? You understand where we're going?
Yeah, okay. Rabbi,
yeah, Larry.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, but I'm just thinking, like, especially like in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, there's cameras all over the place.
Yep.
I mean, so I know we're, like, I understood from the get-go, we're going to try to find, like, how does this work within the hospital, but how do we deal when it's outside of the hospital?
Correct. And that's why he worded the question the way he did. You notice that he added in parentheses, even in the streets and at traffic lights, because he doesn't want an answer that's just going to work in the hospital setting.
Okay.
Yeah. If the answer is just, well, patients need you, then, you know, it's a very limited utility answer. So yeah, no, we have to give answers that work for the Jew who wants to go to the Kotel, or the Jew who wants to visit right. His neighbor, or whatever it is. Jew wants to walk into shul. So he says, Uvmichtav chasum al yedei hagon Rav Moshe Feinstein zatzal one. So he brings a letter signed by Rav Moshe. And it's actually very funny. If you look in the journal Truman, this is not a full article. It's the question and then the excerpts of, not excerpts, but the responses that he received from the different gedolim from whom he solicited answers. So you don't get full descriptions. That's why I have my sources on the source sheet to flesh out what it was that they were saying. But in the Rav Moshe letter, the response is actually written by, I think it's Rav Mordechai Tendler. I think it's Rav Mordechai Tendler who writes the response. And then below it, you have Rav Moshe writing, and you ask that I should sign just in order to strengthen this, so I am signing as well. And then he signs his name. Which unfortunately was necessary, because towards the end of Rav Moshe Feinstein's life, there were publications that appeared, often from members of the family, that other people said, outsiders said, well, that wasn't really Rav Moshe, that was their position. So Rabbi Rosen said, I would like to have Rav Moshe's signature on this, and, you know, to help me feel confident that this is his position. So, what did Rav Moshe say? Bekesher la'sheila la'avor lefnei matzla masha omei bepesach eze binyan. As far as the question of going in front of a camera that is at the entrance to some building, not just a hospital, but some building, me'achar shezeksav she'inu miskayem va'afilu adiv. So he says, first of all, this is what we call non-durable text. It is text that is not going to last. And he says, va'afilu adif, and maybe even better than that. He doesn't explain what that means. I understand why you'd want it to say that it's non-permanent text, because if it's non-permanent text, maybe I can be lenient on Shabbos, because maybe the prohibition against writing is specifically writing text that will endure. And it is non-durable in the sense that it's here and gone. Right? It's on the screen and then it's off the screen. So that, he says, plus he says it's even better than that, but he doesn't explain why. I think what he is referring to, I see your hand, Michael, and Dr. Block. I think what he is referring to is what we're going to see next in Rav Neuwirth. So I'm going to hold my explanation for what he means about non-durable text and better than that for Rav Neuwirth. And there we'll explain it. Yes, Dr. Felder.
Just a clarification. I logged in just a minute or two late. I saw the sources, but I'm having a hard time finding on the source sheet where you are.
So we're only in the Nishmas Avram right now, where it says Tough at the top.
Okay. All right. I'll find it. Great. Thank you.
Sure. Dr. Block.
Yeah, we now have, it's all durable. I mean, obviously you keep it for months sometimes to see who came in, who didn't come in.
Right.
So it's all durable now.
So the question is, what do we mean when we're referring to the writing? Do we mean the image on the screen, or do we mean the data that's been preserved? Those are two different things. The data may be preserved. It could be that on a server somewhere, you keep files. I will tell you that many... I don't know about hospitals, but many facilities do not preserve records of those who go in and out. It's just the data is not worth it. But what he is talking about in terms of writing is not the stored data. He saw the image on the screen, because that would be considered an actual written thing, so to speak, because drawing a picture counts as writing as far as Shabbos is concerned. But we're going to come back to that when we talk about Rav Neuwirth. So hold the thought on that. But he's not talking about the stored data that's bits and bytes in your computer. He's talking about the picture that's made on the screen. So Rav Moshe says this is non-durable text and maybe even better than that. And again, we have to explain. But he also offers something else. He says, Hu l'chol hayose rakesu derabanan. He says that makes this, at worst, a derabanan. Ume'achar shemitzad ha'over, rak havi l'chol hayoser psik resha delo ichpas lei. He says, since, as far as the person who's walking in front of the camera, this is, at most, a psik resha that he doesn't care about. I'm going to come back to explain that. Az mutter, so it's permitted. V'gam mitzad ha'misaderes ha'matzlama ein iser And he says, don't ask me about the person who set up the camera, because he's not doing any malacha on Shabbos. He set it up before Shabbos, so he isn't doing anything wrong. What are we talking about? So there is an area of Hilcho Shabbos which focuses on the intent of the person who does the malacha. We say that the malachos of Shabbos are only called malacha in their biblical sense in the event that you do them in the way that it was done in the Mishkan, for the purpose for which it was done in the Mishkan. In the event that you do malacha, but you didn't intend it, it is for sure not biblically prohibited. But the question arises, what if it's not what you intended, but it's a guaranteed result of your actions? So, an example. I have a lawn. And let's say it's Shabbos during Sukkot, or just Yom Tov during Sukkot, doesn't make a difference. And I want to wash for bread. So I wash my hands over the lawn. I am not intending to water my lawn. My intention is to wash so I can have bread. But it's a guaranteed result that I am watering the lawn. So normally we say that's called a psik resha. And the usual explanation of psik resha, although not everybody holds this, but the usual explanation of psik resha is you have somebody who his kid is bored on Shabbos. He wants to give the kid a toy. So he takes a chicken, he cuts off the chicken's head, and he gives the kid the chicken head to play with. This is before they had battery-operated toys. So he gives the kid a chicken head to play with. And when you say to him, but you killed a chicken on Shabbos, that's a malacha, you're not allowed to do that. His answer is, I didn't want the chicken to die. I just wanted to give my kid the head to play with. To which the answer is, yeah, but if you cut off the head, it's going to die. You know that. That's the way it works. Almost every time out. Right? The case of Mike the Headless Chicken notwithstanding. The rule is that chickens without heads tend to die. So the statement is, you're liable for cutting off the head of the chicken, even though that wasn't your intent, because you put the chicken to death. You knew that that was going to happen. I say not everybody agrees that that's the case, because there is another view found in the Rishonim that it's not talking about that. It's talking about a thief who cuts off the head of his victim, not because he wants the victim to die, but because he wants to steal from him. That's all. He wants the money. So that's another case where he says, I didn't want the person to die. I just wanted convenient access to his money. So yes, I chopped off his head, but I wasn't trying to kill him. And one response is, well, that's a psik resha. That's a guaranteed result of your actions. So the point is, normally we say, if something is a guaranteed result of your actions, then you are going to be liable. However, what we just saw in Rav Moshe Feinstein, and again, for those just joining, we're in the Nishmas Avram in page Tuf. What we just saw in Rav Moshe Feinstein is that there's a different rule where that guaranteed result is one that you care nothing about. You have no interest in it whatsoever. It means nothing to you. It could happen, it could not happen, and you could not care less. So you walk into the hospital, you're passing in front of the security camera. As far as you're concerned, who cares whether the security camera catches your picture at all? You would like it to catch everybody else's picture, but you have zero interest in it catching your picture. So therefore, it doesn't interest you. It's called lo ichpas lei. What is the halacha in the case of psik resha that you don't care about at all? So here I refer you to the separate source sheet. The one that says at the top, Nishmas Avram, Topic 7, Introduction to Medicine and Shabbos, 224.25. So the question of a psik resha where you have zero interest in the result starts with a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Gimel, Amud Aleph, Shabbos 103a. Everyone sees that? Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, the sages taught, Hatolesh Ulshin v'amirzared ziradin. If somebody uproots grass on Shabbos, or somebody cuts shoots from the ground, im la'achila, if he does it for the sake of eating it, he's liable biblically kigro geres. if he cuts a dried fig amount, that's the minimum amount of food of this material for it to be considered significant. So you're liable biblically if you cut that amount. Imla behema, if it isn't for a human being to eat, it's for an animal to eat, then kimlo piagadi, then it's the amount that would fill the mouth of a small goat. That's the minimum amount for it to be considered significant. A goat's mouthful. Im lahesek, if your goal in cutting it was that you wanted to light a fire with it, enough to cook a light egg. What that means exactly is not important for us right now. Im liyapos es akarka, but if your goal in picking the grass was not you want to use the grass for some purpose, but rather you want the ground to look nice, you have weeds growing, and you're trying to pick the weeds so that your ground will look good, then kol shehen, then any amount that you pull up, you're already liable for, because you already accomplished your goal. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Atu kulhu lo liyapos es hakarka ninu? I don't understand. All of these other goals for picking the grass, right? You're picking the grass to eat it. You're picking the grass to feed it to your animal. You're picking the grass in order to use it as firewood, as kindling. All of those also involve the benefit of improving the ground. You are getting that other benefit as well. So therefore, if I'm liable anytime I do it to improve the ground, even for a minimal amount, I should be liable after doing any minimal amount, even if I have some other purpose. Everyone understands the question. That's what the Gemara wants to know. Why are you giving me these other shiurim? It doesn't matter. It's always beautifying the ground. And therefore, the only shiur I need to know is you're liable for doing any minimal amount. So Rabba of Rabbi Yosef de Amri Travayu. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef explained, Ba'agam Shanu. This is talking about a wild meadow. And because it's a wild meadow, therefore, you don't care about improving it. You don't care. It's not your land. So the Gemara then says, Abaye Amar, Afilu Tema Basada. Abaye says, even if it's in a field, Delav Agam, it's not a meadow. Ukigon Delam Kamachavein. But it's talking about where you did not intend to beautify it, and therefore your shear is not any minimal amount. To which the Gemara asks, "Vaha Abaye v'Rava da Amri Trevayu Moder Rabbi Shimon v'Pesik Reishe v'Lo Yomus?" I don't understand. Doesn't Abaye believe that you're liable for cutting off the head of the chicken because it's a guaranteed result? So even if when you pick this stuff, you're not interested in beautifying the land, nonetheless, it is the end result of what you're doing. So the Gemara answers, Lo tzvicha ba'ara dekaavid ba'ara dechavre. Yeah, but this is talking about where you're doing it in somebody else's field. I may be interested in the benefit that my ground, my yard looks nice. I don't care about my neighbor's yard looking nice. If I am picking grass in the neighbor's yard, it's because I want to eat it or I want to feed it to my animal. It has nothing to do with wanting to beautify my neighbor's property. Everyone clear on that? Is that understood? Yeah, Michael.
It seems to me that, I mean, I do a lot of work outside. If my intention was beautifying the place, it would be cut in a very, very different way than if I had, let's say, sent a goat out to say, you know, do a favor, goat, you know, eat some of the grass. I'm not sure it would look so beautiful. So I've got different intentions. You know, the results, I think, actually would be different, unlike the chicken, where the results will be the same. You have a dead chicken. But these, I think, will be very, very different results.
Right. I lost you. There you go. Now I hear you.
No. Okay.
But either way, I hear what you're saying, but I think that's more of a 20th century way to look at it and less of what they would have been doing. In other words, we will cut differently in order to have a nice looking lawn. For them, it's just a matter of, are there things growing out of the ground or not? And let's get rid of them. It doesn't sound like they're looking at it in terms of what we think of as landscaping. Yeah, that's what I see here. Follow?
I follow. It doesn't. That's fine. I'll take your word for it that that's what their intention was.
I mean, just the fact that the Gemara doesn't raise that as a distinction.
Yes.
Yeah. So, on this statement that Abaye is making, that when you do this on a neighbor's property, the fact that it's a psik resha doesn't matter. The fact that it's a guaranteed result doesn't matter. Look at what Tosfos has to say in source number 2. V'chimode Rabbi Shimon b'psik resha. When we say that Rabbi Shimon, who normally believes you're not liable if you didn't intend the malacha, when we say that Rabbi Shimon agrees you are liable in the event that you, it's a psik resha case, Hani mili b'midi d'nechole. That's talking about where you're happy about. It's good for you. Im misrami, if this happens, David sricha lagufa. So that this is a malacha which is necessary for the sake of the normal result. Aval b'midi d'lo ichbas lei lomode. But if it's something that he doesn't care about, then no. If it's something that that this person doesn't care about, like I don't care about what my neighbor's lawn looks like, then Rabbi Shimon will say, I am not liable. So Rav Moshe Stern, in source number 3, applies this to security cameras. He says, he's talking about going into someone else's house when they have a security camera. And he says, Benidon Shalanu, in our case, Shahakli ke'ena television. Hamitzdalem kol ish ve'ish ha'over pesach habayis me'atzmo b'derech otomati ha'ne'erach me'erev Shabbos. He says, in our case, where you have this television type of equipment, where each person who passes the entrance automatically is recorded and its setup is there from before Shabbos, he says, for sure, everyone will agree that at worst, what you're doing is a derabanan. Avdavi psik reshe, granted it's a guaranteed result, psik reshe bidderabanan kvar ola aldas atrumas hadeshen lahatir. The trumas hadeshen says that if it's a psik reshe of a derabanan, you could already permit it. Vamagen Avram ha'erich lachlok, the Magen Avram disagreed with the trumas hadeshen. Vani kvar hevesi b'sifri, but I brought already in my book, by my book, bekama mekomos, mehameiri umevishonim acherim. He says, I brought, this is Rav Moshe Stern, I brought in my Be'er Moshe in various places, from the Meiri and from other Rishonim, shadaitam maskemes l'shitas ha-trumas hadeshen, that they agree with the trumas hadeshen, avo benidon didan. Normally they agree with the trumas hadeshen. It's a problem to go in front of the camera. But in our case, this is a guaranteed result that doesn't interest you, that you don't want. Or at the very least, you're not interested. And he says, the truth is, I think it's even less than not interested in. I think you actually don't want to be on camera, he says. In such a case, even the Magen Avram would agree. Boven shein less or meikar ha-halacha, he says, letter of the law, I would not prohibit it. Al kolzeh mizilus de Shabbos lepalatnu. Then he says, yeah, but it is degrading for Shabbos. That's a separate consideration. So, what emerges here is, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the reason I'm allowed to pass the security camera in the hospital is, first of all, it's not real writing, and we're going to come back to that. Second of all, you have no interest in showing up on this security camera. That's Rav Moshe's position. Clear? And the Be'er Moshe, Rav Moshe Stern, is stronger in his formulation, where he says a guy walks in front of a security camera, he doesn't want to be recorded. He doesn't like the fact that he's on camera. He'd be much happier if he wasn't on camera. Which, I hear that. Back into the Nishmas Avram. So we are now back on the page that has the letter Tav at the top. And we are at the bottom of the first column, 4 lines up from the bottom. Umori v'rabi hagon Rabbi Yeshua noivert shlita. That line. Everyone have it? Okay. So he says, my Rebbe, Rav Noivert, Oneh, answered the following to my question. Be'inyan televizia b'magal sagur, regarding closed circuit television, mikevan mechuvan milifnei Shabbos Kodesh v'chulei. It is arranged before Shabbos and so on. Vaday ein lo kiyum. He says it's not enduring. The writing is not going to last. And again, Dr. Block, he's referring to the writing on the screen, not storage of the data. And he says, ve'od, and further, mi omer bichlal shezek sav. Who says this is writing in the first place? Forget the writing in the data being stored somewhere. But even on the screen, who says this is writing? Ze elektrodot bitzurat adam. These are, as he puts it, and you're going to have to adjust your technology as screens, you know, develop. But he says these are electrodes in the image of a person. This is not writing, he argues, and he says, Vaharaya, the proof of this is mimachshev shekosven alav shem Hashem. If you have a computer and you type Hashem's name, so nobody says you can't turn off your computer now. So he says, clearly, this is not considered writing. Not writing at all. And that's the position that that Rav Neuwirth takes. He's going to quote Rav Shlomo Zalman next, but I want to unpack this a little bit. When he says that that this isn't writing, he doesn't expand. He doesn't tell you what he means when he says this isn't writing. But here is what I think he's talking about. I gave a shiur on medical imaging many, many years ago. If you take a look on your sheet at source Aleph, this comes from the Prima Gadim on the Shulchan Aruch. He's dealing with the issue of invisible ink, developing invisible ink on Shabbos. So he says, V'osan akosvim divrei seser b'niyar. Those who write secret things on paper, im chalav shenechlav, with milk. I guess the idea is that the milk is very light and then it evaporates. I don't know. Velonis bashel, it was milk that was milked and it was never heated. Venivlav b'niyar, it gets absorbed in the paper. Ve'en rishumo nikar, and you can't see it. You're not able to tell. Ukshabala chaveiro, but you bring it to your friend. No sein oso etzel ha'esh. He puts it near the fire. Vishal heves, and next to the flame. Umischameim, and it heats up. V'nikar haksavahu, and at that point it becomes visible. So im asa kein b'shabbos. If somebody does that on Shabbos, yesh lomar d'chiyuv chatas leka, you could argue there is no biblical prohibition. Even though you caused writing to appear, that is not a biblical prohibition. In this case, umikomako midrabanan asur, rabbinically it will be prohibited. Didami lekosev, because it's like writing. Vekolshkin b'makom shayad soled esbo, and certainly you'd have a separate problem if you put it in front of the fire at a place where it will be scalding. The heat will be scalding, so now you've heated up your invisible ink. That's a separate problem, is cooking the invisible ink. But the point for our purposes, and what the Prima Gadim is saying in the source that's labeled Aleph on your sheet, is that developing invisible ink on Shabbos does not carry a deoraisa. It's not called writing. That's what the Prima Gadim says. So the Har Tzvi, Rutzi Pesach Frank, chief rabbi in Yerushalayim, asks, what exactly does that mean? Why is this only a derabanan? What is this? And he offers two answers. Excuse me. He offers two answers. One answer is, it's not called writing. And he gives you an analogy. Let's say you have a mill that's running. You have a water-driven mill running on Shabbos. You drop your grain into the mill while the mill is running on Shabbos. Have you violated any halachos?
No. Sounds like you've done something where you know the outcome, you guarantee the outcome, That is not an acceptable outcome. So,
but you haven't done anything.
Well, you've set something in motion.
Right? It was in motion. The water put it in motion. All I did was add the grain.
I mean, were it not for you putting in the grain, there would be no grinding of that grain. You know, and so I think that without one adding the grain, it wouldn't become flour. That's, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So look at the Magen Avram in source base. Rav Avram Gambiner, Magen Avram. Afilu nosin ha-yisrael ha-rechayim b'shabas leka chiyuv chatos ad she-yitchon b'rechayim shel yad. He says, even if a Jew adds grain to the mill on Shabbos, that's not a biblical malacha. Only if you actually grind it, you turn the mill. That's when it would be. But just adding it to a mill that's moving separately, moving independently, nope, you're not liable. It's an interesting thought. I think it's an interesting thought at any rate. The idea that this doesn't constitute a biblical malacha leads me to ask you the next logical question. I'm going to ask the following. I'm going to actually ask the question. I'm going to pause and step away for one moment, and then I'm going to come back. But I'm going to ask the question first. Let's say your oven is on, or let's say your stove is on. Let's take the stove, because ovens add problems because you're opening the door, you're closing the door. So forget the oven. Take a stove. Your stove is on Shabbos. You take a pot of water. You put the pot of water onto the burner that is on. Are you liable on Shabbos? You did not do anything to the water. The stove did it to the water. If the Magen Avram believes you're not liable for grinding because the mill did the work, then you're not liable for cooking either because the stove did the work. So I'll be back in just a moment. Sorry, just needed to get a drink. Okay, so what's the difference between the mill and the stove? There is a difference. What's the difference? But why does the Magen Avram... Instinctively, we know you can't get away with putting the pot on the burner and calling that only a derabanan. But why not, if it's true that when you add grain to the mill, we're calling that a derabanan? The answer is... Yeah, Toby?
Intention.
What do you mean?
When you're adding... I don't know why you're adding that grain to the mill.
Oh, I want it to be ground up. I want to make flour. That's why.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then I don't get it.
So the Karban Nisanal is a commentary on the Rosh. And the Karban Nisanal explains why. He says, because when you grind, the act of grinding is an act that human beings perform. In other words, you do something normally. You take a mortar and pestle and you grind things up. Or there's a mill with a crank or something that you pull and you turn and you grind things up. That's the way milling works. That's what tochein is. Grinding is an action that you normally perform. That's not so for cooking. Cooking is always... you just expose something to heat and the heat does the job. There's never a case in which you do more in order to cook. It's always you expose something to heat and the heat does the job of cooking. So therefore, putting something on the stove is a normal act of cooking. That's the Karban Nisanal's distinction. Yes, Dr. Block.
Before there was gas stoves, you had to get the wood ready. You had to make the fire. So you took an action in order to make the fire.
To make the fire, sure. Sorry, so go ahead, finish.
Even though the fire does exist, there is a methodology to create that fire. And so it should be the same thing as a methodology of having water flow through your rechayim.
You went back too far in the process. Are you liable for making a fire? Absolutely. Havara is something you do. But that's a different malacha. That's not the malacha of cooking. That's the malacha of making a fire. That's a different thing. It's a different pursuit. They're two different things. This has other applications in halacha, but I'm not going to go there right now. It's a side note. I just find it a fascinating one. The point for us is this. Like the Magen Avram said, this is the Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. He says, like the Magen Avram said, that if you add grain to the mill on Shabbos, you're only doing a derabanan. So too with the invisible ink. If you make the ink visible, that is a case of the flame doing the work and producing the writing. You didn't actually write anything. You follow? That's the argument. This gets brought in discussions about a telegraph, but I'm not going there. It comes up in the Yesoda Yeshurun on telegraphs. So the Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says, one reason why it's only a derabanan, according to the Magen Avraham, to develop invisible ink, is because you didn't actually write anything. The machine did the writing, so to speak. The fire did the writing. Second argument that he makes is because it's done with a shinoi. It's done in an unusual way. This is not the normal way of writing. Right? The normal way of writing is not take a piece of paper, put it near a flame, and writing appears. I brought you the Rambam in Source Gimel. He talks about writing in an unusual way. If you write with your left hand, if you hold the pen in your toes, if you hold the pen in your mouth, these are all unusual ways to write. He also has a third explanation, which is irrelevant for our discussion. But it's an interesting point. He says, when you expose invisible ink, the act of writing happened when they first applied the material to the paper. That was when the writing took place, when they wrote with the invisible ink in the first place. Now you're just exposing it. That's what it's in Source Dalet. But I'm not going to go there right now because it's not directly relevant for us, and I see that I'm eating up time. The point is, what Rav Neuwirth is saying is that this is not called writing, just like regarding the invisible ink case. It's not called writing. I mean, I'm assuming that's his thinking. He didn't say anything about why he says it's not called writing, but I believe this is why. It's not called writing because you didn't write anything. It's like the fire exposing the invisible ink. When I walk past the camera and the camera records my image, I didn't hold a pen. I didn't draw anything. It just happened. That's the difference. Toby, you were going to say?
I was going to ask, with all of this, does, you know, this reminds me of discussions we had earlier where the question, part of the question was, need, necessity, was it, you know, life-saving? Does that ever come to play here? Like, why are we writing? Is it urgent? Can it wait?
So,
or it's just, okay.
Right. So we're actually applying this outside of the hospital setting, beyond the hospital setting. So we're looking at this more globally. If I'm in the hospital setting and somebody needs me, whether for medical care or even just Bikur Cholim, I may have added justifications. But
when we're talking about doing something that is potentially Mechal Shabbos, shouldn't there always need to be, I mean, you see, because when you talk about Shinui tells me there's a need.
Right.
Whatever is in the hospital, I need to be walking over there. I don't need to be walking over there.
Shinoi is just
I go a different way and avoid the light.
So shinoi is a way to downgrade a malacha from a deoraisa to a derabanan, and there are cases where that's important to do. But what they're arguing here is this isn't even about that. They don't look at it in terms. I mean, we did mention shinoi as one of the reasons why in exposing invisible ink it wouldn't be considered a malacha. What they're arguing here is it's not called writing, and therefore it's going to be fine, not only in the hospital, but on the street, walking into a neighbor's house. It'll still be okay. I understand what you're saying, that there's a sort of instinct of, but of course you should have to avoid this. And in practice, that's what we do. Meaning, you know, I was in Israel last month, and I walked to the Kotel on Shabbos. So even if I'm allowed to walk in front of the tourists', you know, cameras as they record things, I'd rather not. You know, I'd rather avoid that. But what he's saying is, letter of the law, no pun intended, this is not cold writing. That's what he's saying. Dr. Block.
Presuming that this was all written in a time when there were VCRs. We're not talking about digital. We're talking about a VCR. You know, you remember the old-time forensics, maybe before your time, Rabbi, but the old-time forensics was you pull the VCR.
Yeah.
When you watch Columbo, he pulled the VCR, which showed the picture of the whole thing, which seems to me on a VCR like it's a cassette as opposed to a digital reenactment.
But a VCR is still magnetic tape. It's still code. It's not like you could pull it out and look at the tape and see a picture. If you pulled out the ribbon, so to speak, you know, the tape itself from the VCR, you didn't see pictures. It wasn't like, you know, what do they call the eight cameras, you know what I'm talking about? This wasn't film. Yeah. This wasn't, VCR would not work that way. It's magnetic tape. But this is all within Rav Neuver. Let's now see what Rav Shlomo Zalman said. So,
Polaroid.
Sorry? Yes, Simi.
Were you thinking of Polaroid?
No, I was thinking about a type of film strip. There was a type of camera, and it used, there was eight in the name, but I don't remember what it was.
Super 8.
Super 8? Okay. Even the VCR, you wouldn't be able to look at it and like see anything. Let's see what he does here. We're now on the top of the second column, the second line. V'dibarti emori v'rabi agon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Neuver said, I spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman, v'hu amar li, and he told me, she'ein makom lachshosh, ki ein zeksav. There is no concern. This ain't writing, he says, and we've already seen why. Ela adayin yesh la'ayin, but there is room to examine, he says. V'ona tshuva, where is there an answer to the following question, he says. Ki choshishani shema bizman she'ein ovrim ein bechlal zerem. He says, are these cameras motion activated? So that when you're not walking in front of it, there's no current flowing through it. V'rak al yedei she'adam over hu goreim lezerem mofia atmuna. When you pass in front of the camera, you cause there to be a flow of electricity and the picture shows up on the screen. V'davar ze matzu hayom beramkol. He says, we find that with microphones. It's not active until there's a sound. Now, I'm leaving out microphones. We're not discussing microphones right now. That's its own Torah. But what he's saying is that he does have a concern that maybe you bring the device to life because it detects your movement and that starts a whole bunch of circuitry. However, the answer is that that's not what's happening. He continues, this is the Nishmas Avram writing, Va'one HaRav Rosen Shlita, Rav Rosen in that article in Tchumen answered this question that Rav Shlomo Zalman asked. And he said no. Kafisha his barer, as it has been clarified, matzlamot televizia b'magal sagur hamakubalot bashuk, the standard closed-circuit cameras that are available in the marketplace, poalot beritzifut, they are constantly on. Ve'ein bahen saf hagorem lahaf'alasan, there is no threshold at which suddenly they'll turn on. Rakasher misracheshes tenuas ha'adam, like only when there's movement from a person, v'chayotzebo and the like. He says, it's not true. Rav Shlomo Zalman's concern was that if by walking in front of it, I am activating the camera, that's like I'm turning the camera on Shabbos, and that's a malacha. But Rav Rosen answered, you're not turning it on. It's on constantly. It's on continuously. There's no issue. Now, Rav Yashiv also answers this question, also permits it, but he offers a fascinating idea to explain why. And this is an idea that I have taught repeatedly, and I have to admit, every time I teach it, I feel a little bit like a fraud because I don't really understand what he's saying. I can tell you what he's saying, but I'm very troubled by it. So let me explain it outside, and then we'll see it inside. Look at the source sheet, please. Source, if you look at the second side, source number four. You have the translations, because like I said, I've taught this any number of times. Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Bun b'shem Rav Chuna. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Bun taught in the name of Rav China, Rav Chuna, depending on which part of Europe you lived in. No, this is Yerushalmi. But in any case, he said, Haya tzvi rats kedarko. If there is a deer running along, normal running, v'niskaven lin ol ba'ado, and you intend to close the door in order to, not in order to trap the deer, but in order to close the door for yourself. V'na'al ba'ado ba'adat tzvi. But lo and behold, when you close the door, it turns out the deer is inside the house or inside the yard or whatever it is. So you have trapped the deer, but it wasn't what you were trying to do. All you were doing was closing the door for yourself. Mutter. That's allowed, says the Yerushalmi. I would have assumed that if I close the door and the deer is trapped, that is psik resha, right? It's a guaranteed result. There's a deer inside, the deer is now trapped. He says, no, that's allowed. You didn't intend it. But what happened to psik resha? What are you talking about? So the Rashba in source number five gives an answer. Ubi Yerushalmi nira shehitiru lin ol lechatchila beso lishmor beso. In the Yerushalmi, it appears that you are allowed to close the door of your house in order to guard your house, and you end up along the way guarding the deer that's inside. Since you need to guard your house, granted that the deer will be trapped along the way, memela, mutter, it's allowed. As long as your goal is not just to trap the deer. The Rashba says, don't worry about this whole business of guaranteed results and whatnot. No, forget psik resha. You didn't close the door to trap the deer. You closed the door to close the door. The deer is just a bonus. So the Ran challenges the Rashba. And he says, what are you talking about? This is the definition of psik reshe. You cut off its head, and therefore it died. You close the door, therefore you trap the deer. Why is this okay? So Rav Shmuel Wozner, the Shevet Halevi, comes up with this fascinating leniency that I have such a hard time understanding. He says, b'chol malacha, with every type of malacha, everyone sees that, number six on the sheet? He says, b'chol malacha, with every type of malacha, o oseh ha-pe'ula ha-miyuchedes le-malachas isur kechoresh, either you perform an action which is associated with that particular prohibited act, like let's say plowing, o she'oseh pe'ulas heter, or you perform an act that is a permitted act, but has an end result of also plowing. Like dragging a bench. So plowing is either I plow, I take the tools, I take the plow and I plow, or I drag a bench and that ends up creating a furrow. Both of those are called plowing. Or trapping, let's say. Whether by hand or with a trap, there are certain things that are called acts of trapping. There are acts of plowing, there are acts of trapping. But he says, closing a door is just closing a door. That's not an act we associate with trapping, it's just closing a door. He says, that is clearly a permitted act. Sha'osim bainim tzvi babayis, bain ain't tzvi babayis. You close the door, whether there's a deer in the house or not, right? Unless you're a teenager. The normal thing to do is, you come in the house, you would open the door to get in, you close the door behind you. That's the way it works. V'ein heos tzvi babayis mosif tosefes malacha on the ilas aheter klum. And the fact that there's a deer in the house doesn't change what you do to close the door. You did not add one bit to your actions in order to lock in the deer. It's the same act, deer in, deer out. Ve'alkein yesh chidush bazeh, she'ne'ilas delas misyacheses le'inyin tzeda b'chlal. So therefore, it's a novelty that we should ever say that closing the door is somehow an act of trapping. It's just an act of closing the door. L'chein svirolei l'harashba. So the Rashba's view is, didavka kishayadasha atzvi babayis. Only if you know that the deer is in the house. V'na'al beiso l'shem tzeda. And you close the door as an act of trapping. Does hechshev ne'ilas delas le'pulas tzeda levad? Then closing the door is an act of trapping, but otherwise not. You see what he's saying? He says, this is not called an act of trapping. This is called closing your door. I find this idea very difficult, because that's what trapping is. Isn't it? There's something inside a space, and you close the door of the space. Like, what's the difference between that and closing the door of the house? I'm perplexed by it. I am also perplexed because I worry about where this goes. Because what he's going to allow you to do is to walk through the area where the camera is, saying walking through this space is not an act of kosev, of writing. Take a look. Look at the Nishmas Avram now. The second column in the page with Tuf at the top. Kosev Hagon Rav Yosef Shalom Al Yashiv Shlita, in the middle of the page. Rav Al Yashiv said, La'acharona, recently, his ora ba'aya olamit im matzlamot hamutzavim b'mekomos rabim letzarchei bitachon u'shmirai. He says, a worldwide problem has developed, again, no pun intended, with cameras that are set up in popular places, in public places, for the purpose of security. V'arei kishah adam nichnas b'shabbos l'shetach hamitzulam, on Shabbos, you go into the space that is being photographed. Nechshav kekosev v'kach she'echnises atzmo l'hitztalem. Are you called someone who is writing because you put yourself in this space where you're going to be photographed? Ulam nir apashut shevaday ein bazeh malacha de'oraisa. He says, for sure there's no de'oraisa. She'ein derech malacha bekach. Because that's not the way you write. You don't write by standing in front of a camera. V'makose b'smol ein kan malacha. Kavachomer sh'olech kedarko. If writing with your left hand takes it down from a del reisa to a derabanan, then certainly walking as you just normally walk. Gamim nichnas l'shatach mitzulam. Even if you enter a space that is being photographed, ein kan maisa malacha. There is no act of malacha. V'hine. He says, if you were writing, you would only be liable if it were a durable writing. This is now a separate point. Ulam, you know what? I'm actually going to skip, I think, what he does there. It's not so relevant for us. I'm not going to read it out. Where he goes with it is a separate point. It's an important point, but I'm going to explain it outside. He says that when you write, if you write something and then you're going to erase it, that's still called durable writing. It's just that you erase it. In order to be called non-durable writing, it has to mean that it can't last. Not that you have to do something in order to erase it. So in other words, if on Shabbos I write in a pencil, that's still called writing. It's erasable, but it's durable. It lasts long enough to be called writing. As opposed to, let's say I were to use some kind of liquid that evaporates quickly. That is not durable in the first place. He draws that distinction and he writes, if you flip to the page that has Tuf Aleph at the top, the fifth line, V'lachen, he says, therefore, he says, it's not sufficient that you just have them erase their recordings. That just means that you made something permanent and then you erased it. Rather, he says, Lachain Sidru La'achrona, recently they arranged, shebematzlamot beir ha'atika shebir ha'kodesh Yerushalayim, and the cameras in the old city, lo tiskayeh maksiva mitzad atzmo. The writing, so to speak, is not retained. In and of itself, it's not able to stay. V'lo rak ha'yedei mechika mechudeshes, shehi ka'amur enem afkiyas shem amalacha. Not just that someone erases it, because that won't help, as we've discussed. And then he says, "Benosaf lekach." Another point for leniency: Lo nicha leklab a malacha. He doesn't want this malacha at all. Share ein lo tzarech v'ratzon shi'etzamu oso. He has no desire for them to photograph him. It's not like you get pleasure out of seeing yourself on the camera, on the security camera. Betziruf kolhani derabanan yesh lahatiras halicha b'mekomos elu b'shabbosos v'yamtovim. He says, putting together all these derabanans, the fact that it's not really writing, the fact that it's not an act associated with writing, the fact that it's not durable, he says, you can put, and the fact that you don't want it, you can put all those together to permit going there on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that's his leniency. All four opinions end up permitting, just some difference in terms of what their rationale is. Yes, Michael.
Does any of the more recent technology change things? For example, there's a shul here where a place on Shabbos where there's sort of a facial recognition thing. The screen is blank. You walk up and it sort of has a freeze frame facial recognition, and then sort of the and then kind of goes goes from there. The door clicks and then it opens and you get in. Is that?
Ooh. That I could see. I'm not poskening anything for that shul, obviously.
Yeah.
But there I can see a problem. Because now, since that's the way you get in, you do want it. It's no longer lo nichale. You actually do want to be photographed in order to be able to get inside. So that is, that would spark a concern for me.
Okay, so we need more details then.
Yeah.
The fact is that we found a different route to get in, but we've sought that out.
Yeah. Another thing that changes things in terms of the technology, and I haven't really looked into it, but I've seen it it's been discussed, is the issue of e-ink. Unlike your standard screen where you have pixels that are constantly refiring to create the image, e-ink, I'm told, is actually durable. It's sitting there just like ink on a paper. It's just on a screen. And that raises certain questions about whether this is now again called writing. That's another issue. I don't know how widespread e-ink is. I don't think it's what's used on these security camera images. It's something that does have its own rules, I believe. Toby.
So let's going back to the regular technology, and it's not being permanently recorded or anything, but I'm a bit of a ham. And I see that there's a camera there, and I decide to do a little thing intentionally because I want it to pick me up.
I would avoid that. Yeah, because
so it does to an extent come down to intention.
There is an element of intention. I mean, each of the voices on this mentions some version of lo nichale, lo ichpas le. You know, so yeah, if you're going to use it as a way to signal to people inside or people who are watching the screen or whatever, I would be less comfortable. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. I do intend, just to, from a going forward perspective, today is what, the 24th. So I do expect to have a shiur next week. And the week after, I may not the Monday night after Purim. We'll see. Not 100% sure yet. Okay. Thank you very much.